How's it going, sports fans? And welcome to the biggest sports show in TO, Sports from the Six. I'm your co-host, Big Flip Livingstone, joined by my co-host, Joe Narsa, here with you for episode number 28, where today we'll be talking the World Junior Hockey Championships with our special guest from the Canadian Press, John Chidley Hill.
Stamkos in TO, present and future?
Bernier's back with the big buds.
Penguins drowning in Pittsburgh, and has Edmonton finally struck oil?
And I bounce back with another lock pick in the Flip's Picks segment.
Flip, I am so excited for the World Juniors.
It's a holiday treat, pal. It's just that time of the year where we get to watch a little bit of junior hockey talent, and it's at all hours of the night and morning.
And I was lucky enough, I got to do the CIS webcast and do color commentary, and watching the World Junior team was a blast. However, you know, they didn't play too great their first game. They lost 5-4 to CIS in
That's
the shootout.
That's a shocker.
It really was a shocker, and the head coach was not too happy about it.
Well, was that Canada not playing well, or was that the CIS beating them?
You know what's funny? Canada came out to a 2-0 lead and gave it up, and then lost the lead twice and tied it, and then lost in the shootout.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's going to be an interesting tournament for them. You always think about Canada going in as the number one team and stuff, and we always wonder what they're going to look like heading into the tournament. And one of the things I had asked about early on was, does a loss to the CIS team maybe cause a question mark heading into the world tournament? What do you think?
Well, maybe it can bring them together. Maybe it can galvanize them a little bit in terms of maybe we're not as good as we think, because I think a tendency with junior hockey in Canada, like you said, is Canada's always favored in Canadian hockey fans' opinions. And maybe that trickles down to the team. And sometimes you see them come out of the gates in tournaments a little sloppy, and a loss, an early loss, kind of brings them together. So maybe that can happen to them before the tournament even starts.
And that's the other thing, too, for all of the fans watching the game. It's tough to get a real sense of the team. It's tough to get an understanding of how they're feeling. Because, again, I mean, it was an exhibition. All their exhibition games, even in Helsinki, they're more so defining the players' positions on the team. I don't think they're necessarily defining the team itself.
Mm-hmm.
But because we're so far away from it, it's hard to get a grasp of it. So joining us now is reporter and editor at the Canadian Press, John Chidley Hill. John, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing good. Flip, how are you doing?
I think I'm doing a little bit better because this is a holiday treat. We're about to talk about the World Junior Tournament, so I'm pretty happy.
John has been covering the World Junior team, and as of late, it's been an interesting situation with them. And I think the biggest topic right now heading into Helsinki is, what will their goalie situation be like? And me and John both had the opportunity of watching Team Canada during their CIS tournament. And one thing I noticed was the play of McDonald and Montembeau. Montembeau played, I think, a little bit better. John, is there any word or ideas on what they're going to be doing at the beginning of the tournament with Blackwood suspended?
Well, at the selection camp, Samuel Montembeau told reporters, myself included, that he'd been told when he got the call from Coach Dave Lowry, he'd been told that he was going to be the third goalie, that he would back up Mason McDonald for the first two games, and then when Mackenzie Blackwood returned from suspension, that he'd be in a suit up in the stands. However, as you just said, Joe, at the selection camp when Canada was playing the CIS All-Stars, Montembeau basically outplayed McDonald. And I know that afterwards, Coach Dave Lowry was really impressed. And I don't know, maybe Montembeau will make a case for himself this coming week in Imatra, Finland, where they're having some exhibition games before the tournament begins.
And one thing I noticed about Montembeau in comparison to McDonald is they're both about the same size, but he just seems to be a lot bigger in his net, a lot better presence. And granted, Canada did play a lot better in the second game where they won 5-0. They lost the first game 5-4 in the shootout. But all in all, I mean, we've seen it here in Toronto. A goalie just making routine saves is doing his job. And in comparison to McDonald, even the routine saves from Montembeau looked great.
I agree with you. Montembeau just looked more self-assured. And he said it himself, you know, he's got nothing to lose. A week ago, on Tuesday, when he was called to the camp, he wasn't even supposed to be at the camp when they originally named the roster for it. It was just going to be Blackwood and McDonald. But, you know, Montembeau has been handed this opportunity. And so he's kind of in a no pressure situation, right? Like, it, no matter what happens, he's going to improve his stock. Maybe not with the junior team, but as a player heading to the AHL when his junior career is up. So I think having that lack of pressure makes his life easier in a lot of ways.
Now, John, I want to ask you about one of the other major storylines. Of course, here in Toronto, everyone's interested in hearing about Mitch Marner. There's been a lot of hype around this player the past few weeks, especially. He's been performing excellently in the OHL. How has he looked in your eyes? How's he looked up close? Do you think he's going to live up to all this Toronto hype? I wanted to get your thoughts on Mitch Marner.
I'm not sure anyone could live up to the hype in Toronto for any Maple Leafs prospect.
Agreed.
But I think Mitch Marner is pretty close. One of the things that really impressed me about him throughout the selection camp was that he was so comfortable with the media. Not to pick on Phil Kessel or other previous Leafs.
Big reference.
But I think that's the toughest part about playing in the Toronto market is that media presence and having to answer tons of questions and minutia and, you know, people tripping out over, you know, liking a post on Twitter. Like, it's a different kind of beast here. But, you know, Marner, he's 18. He's laughing and joking with reporters and kind of cracking wise as best he can in front of, you know, 15, 20 reporters, no problem. So that kind of relaxed ease, I think, will do him wonders. And the important thing to remember is that when Marner comes to the Leafs, when he's done his junior career and, you know, I think he's going to skip the AHL, he's going to be coming up with a whole bunch of young Leafs prospects, right? William Nylander, Travis Dermott. There's going to be four or five of them, so not all the pressure is going to be on him. Obviously, he's a lot of eyes are going to be on him because he's the number four overall pick, but he's not going to be going through this alone. There's going to be an entire class of them.
Well, I remember when I was speaking to the president of the Don Mills Flyers and even the Don Mills Flyers trainer about Mitch Marner, one of the things they said about him was, although he is a smaller hockey player, he's never caught in a tough situation on the ice because he knows where to be. He's a very smart hockey player. And the president actually said he's the type of person and player that you want to drive 50 miles to watch. When you're watching him on the ice, is there something that stands out about him right off the bat where you can look at this guy and say he's special?
Yes, he's always in the right position on the ice. He's never caught out of position. He's either where he's supposed to be or he's on his way in good time to where he's supposed to be. And you know, his size gets brought up often. And, like, there's a few things that I think should be pointed out. First of all, he's still 18, and you're not necessarily done growing when you're 18. He might have another inch or two in him. He'll certainly put on weight and more muscle mass as he grows older. And the other thing is that the NHL it's trending towards smaller players. You mentioned before that Mason McDonald and Samuel Montembeau, the goalies for Canada, were about the same size. The goalies for the junior national team are the tallest players on that team. They're all 6'3", 6'4". Mm-hmm. Everyone else is about 6 feet or under. Most of the defensemen on Canada this year are 5'10 or shorter. So I don't think that in the long run, I don't think Marner's size is going to be a problem. And in some ways, I think his relatively small size is a benefit because his whole life he's been one of the smaller guys on the ice and he knows how to take a hit. You know, the criticism of Eric Lindros, actually from Theo Fleury, another small guy who was pretty successful in the NHL, was that Eric Lindros never learned how to take a hit because he was always the biggest guy on the ice in junior, right? He didn't have to hold his head up because if someone ran into him, they're going to bounce off of him. But, you know, a smaller guy like Theo Fleury or Mitch Marner, or again, I hate to make this comparison, but Phil Kessel, those guys have learned since the age of 7 or 8 that they have to keep their head up. They have to keep their feet moving and they've basically learned how to dodge hits. And so Marner is smaller and he's going to have a hard time muscling the puck away from people. But he's always been the smallest guy on the ice, or one of the smaller guys on the ice. And he knows how to get the dig the puck out using his speed and his smarts instead of muscle. So I don't think his size is going to be actually that big a deal in the long run.
John, I wanted to ask you about a player that you've had the chance to specifically cover a little bit. Jake Virtanen has recently been loaned to the team from the Vancouver Canucks. He has now NHL experience. He has World Junior experience. And I just wanted to ask you, how do you think his impact will be felt on the team with the experience I've just mentioned?
I think that experience is important. And I also think, more than anything, he adds depth to Canada. You know, the top line is presumably going to be Dylan Strome at center with Lawson Crouse and Mitch Marner on the wings. But then after that, there was a big drop-off in terms of talent. But now that they've got Jake Virtanen back, as you said, he's got a ton of experience. He's learned at the NHL level. He has, I believe it's 19 games with the Canucks under his belt. He also played two games with the Utica Comets of the American Hockey League earlier this week. He was on a conditioning stint. And I think that experience and that leadership is going to be really helpful. And he's probably going to be paired with Braden Point, who is also a returning player from last year's gold medal winning team. And Point didn't play at the selection camp because he has an injured shoulder. But after selection camp, it was announced that for the pre-competition exhibition games, he's going to be playing and that he's 100% and he's good to go. So suddenly they have these two veteran players returning, and I think they're going to make a big difference. They're going to be on the second line. And I think that's the big impact for Canada is depth and veteran leadership.
And John, two quick questions for you. What was the sense about Anthony Beauvillier after that CIS tournament, because he looked fantastic in that second game?
He looked so good in that second game. It was incredible. He was on fire. For people who didn't see the stories or watch it online, he had a hat trick. He had a goal in the first game of the selection camp. And basically, that output earned him a spot on the team. And I think he had the right attitude. He was telling us that for him, he had nothing to lose, and he just wanted to leave the camp with no regrets, to leave it all out on the ice. And he did just that. He was energetic, he was trying hard, and it showed. And in such a short period of time like the juniors are facing, it's such a short, intense competition, you need a guy who's willing to just put it all out there for the sake of the team and for the sake of his career.
So we need you to look into your crystal ball, John. What will be the outcome of Team Canada's World Junior Tournament?
Oh, that's no pressure. That's a super easy question. I think that Canada will certainly make it to the gold medal game. But, you know, anything can happen in those games. And they're not quite as overwhelming as a team as they were last year. But they're obviously a contender. And there's some question marks, but I think that they're definitely going to make the gold medal game. The question is, will they win that?
Well, we hope you're right. I hope they definitely get there. I hope they win it.
It could be a little Christmas surprise, if you will.
Ooh.
But you never know.
Ooh.
You never know. You never know. There could be something under the tree, and I'll give someone, everyone out there, a little extra gift. Check out John Chidley Hill's How the Sausage Gets Made podcast. Gives you a little insight into the industry, and thank you so much for coming on today, John. We appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. I always love talking with you too.
Well, thank you very much. It's John Chidley Hill, reporter and editor at the Canadian Press. Give him a follow on Twitter at J Chidley Hill. Trust me, people, he has a little check mark with a blue circle around it. It'll be worth it. Thank you, John.
Thanks.
As I just mentioned, How the Sausage Gets Made podcast by John Chidley Hill. You can check that out on SoundCloud. That's where you can find that podcast. So thank you very much to John. It's going to be an interesting tournament.
I found it interesting because John was saying he sees Canada in the gold medal game, and then there's your question mark from there.
As to who else will be there?
Well, I think the question mark is more so they'll be there, but then we'll see.
Mm.
Which is interesting because in the last 6 or 7 years, it hasn't felt like the same type of dominance, because I think Canada has been, you know, scarred by too many losses, too many big defeats. And we were talking with him about the goaltending. And I think since Carey Price flipped, there hasn't been that goalie where you look at and you're like, yes.
There hasn't been. That has definitely always been, for me, coming into the tournament, who's in net. And I asked you today on the phone when we were prepping for the show, I said, I know Blackwood got injured, or not injured, got suspended, and Montembeau played really good against the CIS like we had just talked about, but it's always the question mark, and that's why I had to ask you, like, who do you think is going to be in there? Because you're right. Since Carey Price, there's been some letdowns in net. I think you mentioned how the team has been scarred by some losses. Last year, however, was a dominant squad. That was a very good team, and I think, you know, we should mention how many guys are in the NHL that could be on this team. And if they were, I don't even think it's close, right? Duclair, Domi, who else? Sam Bennett.
Yeah, and, well, Connor McDavid, if
Connor
he was
McDavid,
healthy.
Connor McDavid, obviously. Like, that team, if those guys are on it, they're not even going to – it's not even going to be close. This year, I think, though, like you had mentioned, and I want to – you can talk about it right now, their biggest rivalry probably going to be with the U.S.,
I think so. I think the U.S. development program has been fantastic as of late. Like, we look at every single draft, and there's an American very high up in the draft. It's the NHL has actually even turned where Canadian players aren't the majority anymore. The other players are the majority. So The U.S. team is always going to be a lot bigger of a test for Canada than previously. I mean, we looked at a lot of Canada and U.S.'s major moments used to come on the professional international moment. But for me, I think one of the biggest turning points in USA hockey was the New Year's Eve game when James Van Riemsdyk scored against Canada, fist pumped and skated by the bench. And I have from a very good source that entire bench looked at each other and said, we're not going to lose this game. And 5 seconds later, De La Rovere dumped Van Riemsdyk into the boards.
Didn't they come back and win that one, 5-4?
Yes, yeah.
I remember that game vividly, only for one reason, because it was New Year's Eve, so it got a little bit, you know,
yeah,
party-ish.
Pure New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve was, people were asking me, Flip, this is a big game. I'm always into predictions, like we know we'll get to the picks later.
Right.
Flip, what's the final score? And I said, you know what, it's going to be a tight one. High-scoring game, because I remember coming into that game, both teams were flying high.
Right.
I was like, 5-4 Canada, close one. And it was 5-4, and people just looked at me and were like, you got lucky this time.
I don't know about that. I
say
think skill. You're that good.
I say skill. But definitely, Joe, the biggest rivalry that they have, not even in terms of players and competition.
Right.
Canada-USA has taken over from Canada-Russia.
Yeah.
That's the game you want to see, and it kicks the tournament off with Canada-USA at 1 o'clock on Boxing Day.
Which I think is going to be an absolute blast.
Turkey hangover, heavy.
Yeah, it's going to be so fun. And it's, for me, I think I'm looking at the World Junior Tournament this year, and I'm thinking it's going to be either Canada or USA. I think my red and white blood is telling me Canada first, USA second. But I'm looking at Finland. They look solid. And the addition of Kasperi Kapanen, I think, is going to be big. He's been about a point-of-game guy in the AHL. He's looked talented, skillful. The bigger ice is going to be a positive for him because he's going to have more space. But like we were saying before, and it's actually pretty impressive, there's about 8 guys that are showing up to this tournament that are Toronto Maple Leaf prospects.
John mentioned it. Mitch Marner is going to be coming up at a time where he's coming up with a handful of stud prospects. And he mentioned it. That's going to be, you know, hopefully pay dividends for the Leafs down the road. But just for Toronto sports fans, you know, this is Sports from the Six. We always got to show love to our Toronto sports fans. More than usually, this tournament should be exciting for you. You've got players on multiple teams. Kasperi Kapanen, we just mentioned. McDermott.
Yeah, Travis Dermott. Yeah.
Travis Dermott, sorry, is a young defenseman, I believe.
Yes, he is.
Toronto Maple Leafs prospect. So I think more than usually, Toronto sports fans will enjoy this tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the other thing that he touched on, which I found really interesting, was did you notice he said that Marner's not going to play in the AHL? He said, I feel like Marner, once his OHL career is done, when he's in the NHL, because I think he's going to skip the AHL.
Right. Bold statement, John.
You know what? It is a bold statement, but when you look at the type of play he has, there's an interesting argument nowadays, well, actually all times in hockey. If a guy's too good, sometimes he's only good in the NHL and with talent, and the AHL might not be for him.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be intriguing because if the Leafs are able to install guys like Mitch Marner and Nylander and potentially have a guy like Dermott look fantastic in training camp, you also have a couple other draft picks from the last 2 years that have been very good. Like Jeremy Bracco is another one that was actually left off of Team USA.
So that goes to show you how good that American team is.
Yes, very good team. What's interesting to me is if the Leafs are looking to land the big fish and spend a lot of money on the Steven Stamkos.
Uh-oh. Wait, what did you say?
Steven Stamkos.
Just a whisper.
It's just for now. You don't want to, it's like when we were talking about Mike Babcock. You don't want to say it too loud because Detroit might hear.
No, it's fragile.
It's very fragile. That's the fantastic
word for it.
More than
just a whisper.
It's just Steven Stamkos.
Vanishes.
You have the opportunity as the Maple Leafs to insulate this number one center, top 10, arguably top 5 player in the NHL, with a low-cost, high-end talent player, and have the potential of them being absolutely magnificent together.
Now, Joe, we whispered the name a couple times there for people who didn't hear it. This is all Toronto sports fans have been talking about, realistically.
Right.
Raptors have been struggling a bit. Jays are kind of dormant. It's been Steven Stamkos mania, like tweets, denials. Is he coming? I mentioned his parents
re-upping
the house. Have
you ever liked a tweet by accident? Be honest.
Have I?
Yeah.
No.
Right?
Never.
Like, I don't get that.
You know what? Is this a tactic on his end to be like, Tampa, I actually want to stay here, you dumb-dumbs.
Yeah.
Wake up and offer me the money and let's get this deal done.
Mm-hmm.
Or is he already fed up and that's his way of just slyly sticking it to Tampa? Obviously, we don't have the connections to really know what's going on in his head. But we can always dream, right, Joe?
I think so.
We can always dream.
100%. I think tonight at the ACC, there will be a "We want Stamkos" chant.
There will be.
I can totally see it. He could score the game-winning goal in overtime, and everyone will lose it.
Well, let's talk about it then for a sec. He's going to be here in Toronto tonight with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Does he go off? Does he score two goals, two assists, have a great night, and show everyone in Toronto how good he can be? Because he's excited, he's back home. Or is it a distraction now? Is it because all I keep hearing from guys on TV, guys in the business, guys who know what they're talking about, is this is becoming a big distraction for this Tampa Bay team.
Right.
And I think it's got to be nipped in the bud sooner than later, especially if Tampa Bay wants to salvage this season, which is, you know, still also another debate we could talk about.
Well, I think for Stamkos, every player that comes to Toronto is outstanding, I mean, regardless of the situation. Look at, if you were to take a guy like Kevin Weeks' numbers playing against the Toronto Maple Leafs, he's arguably the best goalie of all time. Like the guy,
I'll take that. I'll
right?
take that.
Well, against the Leafs, Kevin Weeks, better than Brodeur. Better than Patrick Waugh. Like, if you have Kevin Weeks against the Leafs in the Stanley Cup Finals, you play Kevin Weeks, you sit Carey Price. But you look at what Stamkos has done in his career against Toronto, he's usually shown up big.
Right.
This is, I think, a little different. I agree with you. It could be interesting because if you do see him shy away from it, maybe not play as well. Granted, he hasn't had the best season of his career so far. He's not playing great this year to his standards. Obviously, he's still one of
his
the best in the league.
Right.
Yeah. But I think Steven Stamkos is going to be Steven Stamkos. A goal on the power play and probably another assist. And if the Leafs get into a lot of penalty trouble, I can see him torching the Leafs.
Well, overall, the season for Tampa has been fairly mediocre.
Yeah.
Kind of with his, well, mediocre for Stamkos by his standards.
Right.
But what's interesting to note for tonight's game is Bernier has been announced as the starter and is in starting in net tonight for the Leafs.
Yeah, he is. Jonathan Bernier.
So he's back up with
recalled.
The club.
Yeah, I know.
And straight into the fire. He went, started his conditioning stint three shutouts in a row.
And then
got lit up.
Did you see what, like, did you
five goals?
He let in the first shot of the game.
That's his nemesis.
No, it gets better.
It's like me in jogging. It's just not going to happen. He sees that first puck coming. It's like me and just
Spumoni,
like...
just bail.
It's like me looking at a plate of vegetables. It's like, this isn't going to end well.
Get away from me.
You know, it's like, just, you know, like, get just get past me. It'll be 1-0 and we'll go from... I'll save the next shot. But you know what I mean? Like, he looks amazing and everyone's like, there's the Bernier we expected.
Right.
He just needed a little time to work on his game. And then, boom, he lets in 5.
But you know what's funny? And that's the thing we were talking about before about Bernier. We keep hitting on the same note. It's like he let in the he let in the game-tying goal in the last minute after the goalie was pulled. It's like, okay, here we go. Mm-hmm. Then he lets in the first goal. He lets in the game-winning goal with 16 seconds into overtime. It's just for Jonathan Bernier, I think he just needs to get his first win in the NHL. I was also intrigued, though. I mean, you looked at what was going on with the Toronto Maple Leafs with James Reimer being injured, and then you see Jonathan Bernier get 3 consecutive shutouts.
Right.
Why was that not the best time to, like, reacquire your asset? You have him at his peak. Bring him in when he's at
you
most
mean
comfortable.
Throw him right back in after that.
What I would have done if I was the Leafs, and again, like, I got to meet Coach Mike Babcock, which was really awesome. He's a really nice guy. Don't get me wrong. It's not like we're best friends or anything, or he'll ever take my advice.
Name drop.
But if I was him, or, you know, Big Lou, I would have said, Johnny Bernier, you had a great 3 games, fantastic 3 shutouts. Jimmy Rimes is hurt. Come up here, play in net for us because this is who you are as a goalie. You are a star. Come back and play like one. But instead, they left him down there again. I would say, for me, I can understand if he is a tiny bit frustrated with the club. I don't think he is right now.
He could be,
but I think he's coming in with the best attitude as possible.
I hope.
But if I was the Maple Leafs, I would have done my best to bring him up. Even after that second shutout, I would be like, great shutout, come up with us, meet us here, we're going to play, you're in net. You've been playing fantastic. Give him that vote of confidence.
I think you can read more into it, actually. I think this means more than meets the eye, if you will. You kind of have to read between the lines. It's like you just said, after that seemed like the opportunity to stick him in. But they didn't. They went with Garrett Sparks. And I think that just goes to show Leaf fans what Babcock thinks of Bernier. And I really do think his leash is extremely short.
Right.
Tonight is going to be a really big game for him. They're giving him a chance to get against a good team. Not like they should. I agree. They should have given him a chance before.
Right.
But now he's going to get his chance to play good. If he doesn't, if he lets in a couple more softies, I don't see Bernier being around much longer, and I don't see him being in the NHL for the Leafs potentially past the Christmas break, to be honest.
But here's one of my biggest problems, though. Like, I look at what I hear some of the fans say, oh, you know what, Garrett Sparks has been playing well, he's won his games. I mean, what more can you ask? Realistically, I mean, how many 7th-round picks have been star goalies in the NHL? Other than, I remember speaking about this and somebody was like, Pecorine. Yeah. And I'm like, unbelievable, you got one. Garrett Sparks, don't get me wrong, he's a fantastic story.
Good backup.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right now, that's what he is.
And I think that just, again, goes to show you even further that Babcock and those guys have decided that Reimer is their guy. Reimer is their guy, and they're looking at it like, if Garrett Sparks is the backup, we know we've got our number one. We kind of like that a little bit better. Maybe Bernier can be the AHL goalie or play really well and then we move him for something. I don't know what they're thinking at this point. I just really think that if Bernier doesn't play good or play well in the next couple of games that he gets, or if he gets a couple of games, I assume that's the plan. I don't know why you would flip him now with Sparks until Reimer gets healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Short leash. He's on thin ice with hot blades, burning hot blades. And he's going to have to play well.
Okay, so let me get you to play general manager of
Please.
The Toronto Maple Leafs.
I am already.
Well, clearly.
You didn't hear that?
No, definitely.
You guys are slipping.
Big flip, Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah.
So if you're right that Coach Mike Babcock does not believe in Jonathan Bernier.
Correct.
So this is Flip's opinion.
I'm listening.
If you are Lou Lamoriello right now.
I am.
And how is this working out for you to develop the chance of trading this asset that has another year at $4 million. And realistically, the team, I feel like, has not put Bernier in the greatest situation. I think the conditioning stint was long overdue. I think that you could have masked it by saying he's not feeling great. give him a couple games, but they called him out. It was meant on purpose.
That's what Flip Lamoriello does.
So now, Big Flip,
I'm listening.
How are you going to maximize this asset if you guys as an organization put a short leash on Jonathan Bernier and don't get to show him off?
Well, here's the thing. There might not be much to show off anymore.
Wow.
That's where I think they're at.
Okay.
And you and I have talked about this at length. I like Bernier as a goalie. I just honestly think when I look at him, and I know we have different opinions on like the attitude he was bringing.
Right.
I honestly think he's almost packed it in. We will see tonight how he, if he comes to play tonight and can roll a few together, I don't think, boom, he plays well tonight and then it's done.
Yeah.
He needs to roll a few together and then I can start to believe in it again. But I honestly think he's packed it in. I think he needs a change of scenery.
Yeah.
I think he's fed up with this. As much as I joked about the reality show and the cameras being in his life and his wife being, I think that's really bothering him.
Mm-hmm.
He comes home to Toronto. Not only does he have the media on his doorstep telling him he's crap, he's got the media in his house filming him and his family. He wants out. I think he wants a change of scenery. He wants out of Toronto. Maybe he won't say it. Maybe he's trying to build his own stock and not complain and try and be a good guy. But in terms of maximizing the asset, I think they're almost at the point where they just want to cut ties and move forward. But maybe not there yet. So, we'll see how he does.
And okay, so you're bringing up a point that even John brought up about the meat grinder media, which is Toronto, which I think it's a little bit overblown in that I don't think we're as unfair as people say we are. But I also don't think we give players too much credit. I mean, your first great moment and we'll put you up on a pedestal, and your first bad moment, that's it, you're done for us. But we were talking before about, you know, a guy like Steven Stamkos coming to Toronto.
Wait, who?
Who?
What?
Stamkos. He's coming.
I'm Googling this. Who is this?
He's decent. I think he was like a he plays good.
Wait,
I think
he plays hockey in Florida?
They play hockey in Florida?
Ow, that hurt my ear. These new headphones.
Sorry.
we're going pro today, and like we have headphones in, like I'm a big shot, and that just hurt my ear.
So, when you look at the last little while, the players for Toronto that have been very big, outside, I'd say, of Curtis Joseph.
Matt Sundin.
Well, no, see, here's my point.
Okay, sorry.
Matt Sundin, not a Toronto boy.
True.
Wendell Clark, not a Toronto boy.
Prairie boy.
Ed Belfour, not a Toronto boy.
Definitely not.
I believe Brian McCabe, not a Toronto boy.
Who knows?
And he had a great time. I mean, it ended off pretty bad. But my point is, do you even think that if a guy like Jonathan Bernier, who comes from a city like Quebec, or sorry, somewhere near Montreal, I think he's from Laval.
I'm going to check into that, but I believe Laval sounds correct. Stat guy.
So a guy like him coming from a hockey hotbed who comes into Toronto and even he might not be able to take it. Do you think a guy like Stamkos could take 24/7? Because Stamkos might be 25/7 or 25/8 coverage.
I think I'm at the point with this whole Stamkos thing that I am just so blinded with, like,
happiness.
By the way, a guy just walked by in a Stamkos Tampa Bay jersey outside.
Oh, my God, it's happening.
It's happening.
The signs are all telling us he's coming.
I just am so boldly biased that I think it's going to work out for the team so well that he is just going to come here and just kill it, and we're never going to need to worry about him taking heat from the media because it's just going to be a prophecy the whole time. He's just going to come in.
Like, he's going to break all of Gretzky's records.
Like, players are going to part on the ice like the water parted. Like, he's just going to skate straight up the middle every time in Barry. I think he will, in all seriousness, all jokes aside, I love to say in all seriousness, if he came to Toronto, I think he would be able to deal with it, especially if he's acting the way he is now. Like you said, how many times have you ever mistakenly liked a tweet? He's
never
doing these things. All mean something.
I agree.
Steven Stamkos, there is no more athletes anymore that aren't aware of their own brand, aren't aware of what they're doing on social media. They might look like they might not know what they're doing. They know what they're doing.
Yes.
That's a calculated decision for him to do that. Oh, I deleted it. Oh, it was a mistake.
Yeah.
Don't read into it. Read into it because it means something. Does it mean he's coming to Toronto? I don't know. He could just be staying in Tampa and trying to pull strings there. It means something, though.
And you know what? For a guy like him, he is in the public eye, and everything Stamkos does is going to be seen. And everything he doesn't do is going to be noticed. And that's something that's been a big problem in Pittsburgh with Sidney Crosby, because everything Crosby has not been doing has gone noticed. Crosby's stats are horrendous. I mean, he's 658th in plus minus. He's in the low 200s or high 100s in both goals and assists. It has not been a fantastic time for Sidney Crosby. And like we were saying off the top, are the Penguins finally drowning?
It looks like it. Someone better throw them an iceberg or whatever Penguins use to stay afloat.
Yeah.
But they're drowning quick. And I was thinking about this the other day, and I want your opinion on it. And I know it's something that Leafs fans will go crazy over
because
it's Kessel, right?
For sure.
But it's what you hear about the team. Kessel goes there, and I know this could be already the makeup of the team already, but you hear this now a few times. Kessel's on the team, and now you hear the team doesn't care. These guys have no give. You know, it looks like they're defeated. No one cares. There's no passion. They're lifeless. Hmm. And I look down the bench, and I'm like, who did they just invest all this money and player? Well, Nick Spaulding, players in. But you know what I mean? I hear that, and I think about what Tim Leiwicki said about the Stars in Toronto a couple years ago, how they don't care. They don't have that pushback. They don't have the fire in their belly. And you watch Pittsburgh play, and that's exactly how they look. Is that Phil Kessel's fault completely? No way. But the point has got to be raised, Joe. The point has got to be raised.
Well, you know what? Here's one thing I will say. A, I don't know if the guy rolls in with like 100 nuggies and he's all like, let's crush some double cheeseburgers and forget about it. But I think I get what you mean. And this is something I've said. I've said it to you. I've said it to a lot of people off the show. And everyone's going to like listen to me and be like, okay, Joe, like 2020 is hindsight. But this is not 2020. I believed this before. What have we noticed when the Toronto Maple Leafs have played the Pittsburgh Penguins in the last 3 or 4 years?
What have we noticed, Joe?
It is always a good game, and the Leafs are always in it. Why? Because they play the exact same style of hockey as the Penguins. There's no defensive structure. They're completely run and gun, and they rely on their speed and offense. The Pittsburgh Penguins are a superstar version of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
The Leafs of old, though. They're now changing their structure.
I apologize. They're a superstar version of Ron Wilson and Randy Carlyle.
The Leafs of old.
Exactly. They do not have a defensive zone presence, which allows them to move the puck quickly. I'm telling you, the Pittsburgh Penguins, I said the year that the Leafs went to the playoffs against the Boston Bruins, I said, please, God, give me the Pittsburgh Penguins, because the Leafs could beat them. And the Leafs could beat them in six, because the difference between those teams is minuscule other than the level of talent. But what we've learned, especially from watching Mike Babcock's Maple Leafs, talent doesn't necessarily define good hockey. It defines talented players and their skill level, but I think Pittsburgh's biggest problem is they're playing the wrong style of hockey, and I don't care how much talent you have.
I think you also raise an interesting point in terms of they have a run-and-gun style team, a team with they don't really look like they have direction. They really do play off their offense, and that's it. I think that honestly trickles down from the top. The team doesn't look like they have any direction in terms of player development, structure of the team. What are they doing? Just literally, it was just kind of like, okay, we're going to slap in Phil Kessel and hope that we score 5 to 8 goals a game and hope Fleury plays pretty good. They just made a move, though, moving Rob Scuderi to Chicago for defenseman Trevor Daley, which is an interesting move. I'm not sure what the upside is there for Chicago, other than I'm reading that the Penguins retain some salary. So that could help things in Pittsburgh, maybe shake things up on the back end.
I like that move. I like Trevor Daley. I think he's an upgrade.
I like Trevor Daley as well.
And I'm surprised that Dallas would make that move because Chicago would make that move.
Yeah, he moved from Dallas in the offseason.
Because I don't know, have they seen Rob Scuderi play in the last couple of years?
Well, I guess
it's a little intriguing.
I guess what Chicago, you love saying intriguing. That's your word.
That's my word for today.
Forever.
Is it?
It is.
It's intriguing.
It is. Almost as intriguing as what's going on out west in Edmonton.
Segway.
Right? Edmonton is playing excellent hockey. You got to give them some credit. Young players performing. Taylor Hall, Eberle's starting to click. Defense, they're finally getting some solid play on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
And in net, Anders Nilsson?
Yes, not Cam Talbot.
Not Cam Talbot. Joe called that one.
Told you.
But Anders Nilsson playing well. Offense rolling, coming back from down in games.
Right.
The other night, Glenn Sather night in Edmonton, and they put up 7 goals on the Rangers.
Was he chewing a cigar during that night?
Oh, he was chewing a cigar.
That guy's a beauty.
He was chewing a cigar harder than I like to chew on steak.
Like, ooh.
I guess chops. You shouldn't be chewing hard on steak. Anyway, impressive stuff coming out of Edmonton. And honestly, after all the losing that they've seen, take it from a guy who knows hockey and losing being in Toronto.
Yeah.
I feel like things have maybe turned a page in Edmonton. Thoughts?
I think the finger's on the edge of the page. I don't know.
Ooh.
I don't know if Edmonton have turned the page yet, because the biggest thing I've seen with most talented young hockey teams is I always want to see year two after their great season. There's always a regression. When you look at
Calgary,
you look at Colorado, you look at Ottawa, synonymous for it, Carolina, synonymous for it. That level of consistency is tough for a team to maintain. However, I think you're starting to see Todd McLellan's ability as a coach.
100% agree. You hit the nail on the head. Continue.
Todd McLellan had a team that played a physical, strong style of hockey that was sound in all three zones. What has Edmonton been? An offensive juggernaut without a neutral zone or defensive coverage with no goaltender.
Mm-hmm. Not going to win many games like that.
Absolutely. And I think the biggest key, and it's something that guys have talked about for, I'd say, maybe 10 years now or maybe more, what you can get defensively out of your star players are going to define the rest of your team. And when you see Taylor Hall being extra physical, granted, he's a physical player in general, but when you see him pushing the limit, getting back, and I know this might be, it's not a shot at him, but staying healthy while doing all of this, it's allowing the team to develop tempo. We saw that in Detroit when Steve Yzerman went from scoring 100 and something points a year to being a 75-point guy. We see Datsyuk, a guy who could score probably 110 points nowadays, who chooses to score 70 but play well defensively. The guys that are supposed to and need to buy in have bought in Edmonton. But I think the biggest key is I think they have the right foundation, just as Toronto does, with their management team, their coaching staff. It's one message, and it's the right message. And I think, like you were saying, I think that's where the page could be turning, Flip.
Also, I look to players like who have stepped up this year. Leon Draisaitl, Anders Nilsson. These are the guys that you didn't count on. You were looking at McDavid, Hall, Eberle, Nugent Hopkins, even Darnell Nurse to be the guys. And they are as well, finally. But you're seeing this whole team play together as a team. Scary thing is they still don't have McDavid in there. Now that Edmonton team that everyone started to say, oh, if they get another pick. And they also don't have Yakupov in there still. He's still injured. So you bring back those two guys, right? That now all of a sudden that Edmonton team that we've been talking about for the past 3 years, oh, they got Hall, they got Eberle, they got Nugent Hopkins. How are they going to continue to get number one picks and still be bad? Now you're starting to see it come together.
Now, and honestly, everybody you named just blew me away. When you really think about the offensive abilities that Edmonton has up front.
Right.
But isn't this the time to capitalize on maybe one of those guys?
Shipping them out?
Yeah. And going after a defenseman that you need. I mean, look, when you look at what they're lacking, Darnell Nurse is going to be a good defenseman in the NHL. I don't know if Darnell Nurse is going to be a dominant defenseman in the NHL because I haven't seen enough of him. I've seen him play dominant in junior, and I know he has it in him, but the NHL is a different beast, and we've seen it a lot over the years. But if you were in that position, would you not look at maybe a guy like Nugent Hopkins or a guy like Eberle who's really turned it on and think to yourself, I have Draisaitl, I have Connor McDavid, Yakupov won't get me enough in this trade. Let me move one of these guys not named Taylor Hall. Let me bring a defensive juggernaut in here to maintain this team aside from, you know, trying to make that move with a guy like Andrew Ferentz. No offense to him, but he's a bottom four pairing guy.
Yeah, I look at the defense now. Oscar Klefbom is also a name that intrigues me.
Me too.
Your favorite word. I think that there could be big things coming out of him. So I wouldn't want to mess with the couple of studs that they have back there, Darnell Nurse, Klefbom. I even like Brandon Davidson a bit. I've seen some flat. He's got a big shot from the point. Young player. A lot of development to come. But I don't touch Taylor Hall. I don't touch Leon Draisaitl. Nugent Hopkins, to me, might be the guy that moves.
He's the most fragile.
But honestly, I like the potential still. He's still such a young player. I think he's 20.
Yeah.
I probably would look to move a guy like Eberle just because I know so many teams would also want him. He slots into a lot of positions, so I would go with him. Quickly, who do you move if you're the Oilers?
I still think I'd move a guy like Jordan Eberle. I don't believe centers grow on trees, and Jordan Eberle being a winger is, I think, the right move. Second of all, Jordan Eberle wasn't a first overall pick. So it's not like you're looking back at the organization.
You have less invested.
Exactly. You can tell your fan base, listen, I know you love Jordan Eberle and he scored that goal for Team Canada. It was all well and good. But when it comes down to it, we look at our number one picks and they are going to be valuable for us in the future. Jordan Eberle is not one of them. And I think he has, like we've said before, I think he has the intangibles to bring you the right type of defenseman because they're looking for a Jordan Eberle attitude in the defenseman they bring in, I think. And as whatever you can do to get Schwartz off the ice, or sorry, Justin Schultz off the ice.
Yeah, Schultz
would be a fantastic move because
not a Schultz fan.
You know what? I was a huge proponent.
Don't get too heated. We got we gotta stay.
Yeah, we level gotta stay headed. On it's edge a good. Here. It's a happy night, happy day for us. I just thought a lot of Schultz coming in. I thought, you know what? The guys played with Gardner. I saw tape on him. He looked fantastic.
Me too.
You know what? He has probably one of the biggest issues I have with Jake Gardner. He doesn't seem to have too much hockey IQ.
Let's not get into that.
But again, I think that's where his faults are. But I think I would trade Jordan Eberle.
So you mentioned now being invested in picks.
Yes. You have to invest in picks, Flip.
Well, lucky for everyone out there, this is the third installment of Flip's Picks. Overall record has bounced up to 1-3. The Carolina Panthers blew out the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday, throwing up a goose egg on the board to go along with the goose egg in their record at 13-0. So my flips pick from last week came through. And for this week, sports fans, I have another good pick for you.
It's great.
It's on the gridiron again. We're looking to the New York Jets visiting Dallas, Texas, and America's team, the Cowboys. The Jets are 3-point favorites on the road, which I think Joe and I both can agree is an excellent number.
Great number.
Dallas, however, is still alive in that beautiful NFC East.
NFC Least.
And have a lot to play for. That being said, however, the Jets just came off a nice victory at home, 30-8 against the Tennessee Titans. Yes, I know Tennessee is terrible, but the Jets are a good team. I take them by 3 in Dallas. I can see them winning by 2 field goals, Joe. And that for this week is Flip's pick. Take the New York Jets -3 on the road in Dallas. Lock it up.
Their turning point has been Fitzpatrick shaving his beard. That's
Fitzy,
all I'm saying.
Fitzy. Harvard product. Take him. Take them all day. Take them all night, Joe. Kind of like you would do with this podcast. Listen to it anytime you want. Centennial on Demand. You can check it out on our Facebook, on our Twitter account. It's always there for you guys. Much love for listening. Joe, much love for being here, pal.
Oh, no problem, Flip. This is absolutely my favorite part of the day. Thank you very much for listening to the biggest show in TO, Sports from the Six. Definitely check us out. And we are doing our best, sports fans, to bring you a fantastic little surprise to give you a little bit more of us.